This is the Home Health Revealed podcast. Hear stories from real industry leaders discussing topics affecting the ever-changing industries of home health, hospice, and palliative care.
All right, welcome to the Home Health Revealed podcast. I am your host, Mike Greenlee, and like always, I've got the great Hannah Vale. Hannah, what's happening?
Hello. Not much. How are you?
I'm good. Did you see the P. Diddy video?
No, I didn't. Tell me about that.
Well, there's a video. I saw it last night because some of my buddies were telling me about it. And then it was on the news this morning where in 2016, I guess his girlfriend, I can't remember her name, but they were in, I guess his house or something like that. It has elevators. I'm sure his house has elevators. Mine just has a stairwell. I have to walk up manually. But anyway, where he threw her down, kicked her twice, and then started to drag her. And so he came on TV this morning and apologized for his actions.
Was his apology accepted?
I don't know. I think P. Diddy's in some trouble, though. Is it still P. Diddy? Does he still go by P. Diddy? Or is it Sean Puffy Combs?
I don't know. I mean, I had kind of forgotten about the guy, to be honest.
Yeah, Bad Boy Records. Is that what it was? Bad Boy Records?
Yeah.
I mean, he made some good music back in the day. All right. Well, hey, we got a great show today.
Yeah, we do.
Actually, I'm pumped about this one more than I've been pumped in a long time. Because
me too.
We got Jamila. She's one of our very own. Very talented. Can't wait to hear her and what she has to say. But we're going to talk about some authorizations and eligibilities. Now, see, I always get in trouble because I always say it's A&E, but that's a channel. I'm supposed to say E&A.
E&A, yeah.
But I
eligibilities
say
and authorizations.
Yeah, Whitney says I'm dyslexic. I don't know. But she also says that if you're dyslexic, that you're a genius.
I think the word is quirky.
I don't think quirky is a good word. I don't like that one. No,
you don't. That's like when somebody says your baby's name is unique. They're like, "Oh, that's unique," and you know it means they don't like it. But
what name did you want to have besides Hannah? Because no one wants that name.
Well, because my maiden name was Dollar, it was so limited. My mom was like, "I wanted to name you Charity, but Charity Dollar sounds like a fundraising organization."
Oh, that does. But I do. Like
I know.
Hannah. I'm just kidding. Nobody wants a Michael. Everybody has a Michael.
You think?
I should have been like Escobar.
Yes, totally.
Escobar.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
I need a cool name though. More syllables.
I like looking at the Social Security like register to see what names are popular, because right now, like, I can't imagine having a baby named certain things. But when I named my kid Susie, people were like, "Really? You're naming her Susie? That's like an old lady name." I was like, "Yeah, well." And
but now that you know her, Susie fits her perfect.
Yeah, totally. Susie J.
Plus she makes me Christmas cards and birthday cards. And
she does. She's the sweetest thing. So, okay. Random question my kid asked me today that I thought was a good trivia question, because my kids are like full of useless information. I want to see if you know this or even can get in the ballpark. Who was the first U.S. president to be born in a hospital?
The first? Okay. When were hospitals created?
Well, they've been around a long time.
Okay. Were they back then? Like
back
when they still used
George Washington?
Pens? Yeah, Washington, I don't know. I mean, let's see. It's got to be before the 10th president. So I go the 5th president. I don't even know who that was.
Jimmy Carter was the first U.S. president to be born in a hospital.
Jimmy Carter?
Yeah, that's like yesterday.
What president was he?
I don't know what number.
We better get on this podcast because clearly the trivia is not good for us.
All right, let's talk about Jamila. Talk about a cool name. Jamila is a really cool name. Were you named after somebody, Jamila?
I was not. My mom just had to pick a random female's name on the spot because, surprise, I'm a girl. They thought the whole time I was going to be a boy. So my name was supposed to be Olajuwon, actually.
Oh, Olajuwon.
Olajuwon.
You forever to learn how to spell your own name back in the day.
I'm telling you, talk about syllables.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you a little bit about Jamila. She has been in the medical field for over 20 years. With over 11 years in management. And this has been from private practice and hospitals to the home health, hospice, and palliative care space. So we're excited to hear from her. She specifically has expertise in eligibilities and authorizations. Welcome, Jamila.
Jamila, we're going to ask some really tough questions. We're going to try to stump you. And I love to have you on the show because, well, you do great work, and it's really fun to have one of our own on the show. We don't get to do that very often. And as you know, we're all about being in revenue cycle management, and authorizations is the leading cause of denials out there. And it costs millions of dollars in lost revenue, and it keeps patients from getting, you know, the care that they need. and we don't see it getting any better. We see a lot of agencies struggling with authorization. So I'd like to start off by just the very first question. In your 20-year experience, why is authorization such a challenge, especially within the post-acute space?
Authorizations in itself is a very underrated realm in the medical industry. Let's just start there. A lot of people know they may need an authorization, but they still think they could have a wiggle room to bypass that and still get what they needed. Unfortunately, no, it doesn't work that way because someone's going to have to end up eating the cost at the end. So it's all about timing and knowing the payers to actually get what's needed in place before any care is given.
Okay. So is this after the referral? You get the referral and then you say, okay, here's the patient. They've got this payer as payer requires authorizations. So that's the next step before you schedule the meeting, right?
Well, before we even go to an authorization, we have to get that eligibility ran. We have to see, does this person have coverage? Is this patient currently active? And with which payer exactly? Which one is primary over secondary? Which one actually requires an authorization and which one does not? Once you get that step out the way, then we see about the authorization piece.
Got it. Then once they get that, then they can finally go see the patient.
Once they lock in that authorization, then we can go see that patient.
All right. Hey, and if it magically, steps are important.
Yeah, steps are always important. And if we follow them correctly, then we don't have to have those back and forth with any accounts. We can actually see it all the way through and it will be a clean account, right? But when there's a ball drop somewhere, then there's always that little digging room that we have to find out where that hiccup was and actually correct that.
Yeah. So how important is to follow the process the first time correctly versus realizing you missed something, then you got to go back? What kind of chaos could that cause?
No matter how you look at it, following the process is crucial. Whether you're the patient or the family just coming in and wanting to get your loved one in, or whether you're that facility that's just trying to go through the process to actually make sure that either they don't have as many touches on their accounts, or they just want to make sure everything just is smooth running, right? Or the agency is stepping in to assist. You want to make sure that the process is being followed, and you want to make sure that everybody's working together to make sure that does happen.
Yeah,
so how important? It's crucial.
Crucial. Is it pretty common that when you start working with a client and you're doing the eligibility and authorizations that you have to rewrite the process?
Yeah, there are sometimes, because we could find actually with certain payers that maybe the glitch really, or not a glitch, but the hangup is that they really never had a contract in the first place with that payer. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the contract is outdated. Maybe we need to actually insert some new elements here. So let's start there. Let's reconnect with that provider rep and actually get this straightened out. Maybe the agency had acquired new facilities and those NPIs never transitioned over. Maybe that payer had a new system and that software never inputted those NPIs in there and they have it all wonky and misaligned. There's so many different layers to it, but if no one starts doing the digging, it never gets addressed, and it always is something missing on that claim form. So when that claim's going out, there's some denial, and it all linked back to when that first initiation was started.
Well, let me ask you this then. Let's say there's no contract. Mm-hmm. How do you know then?
Good question there. I want to just mention none of these were on the question list that I received, okay?
Yeah. We're seeing what live off the cuff.
Right. We only have a script, so we can go off script.
Yeah, I always go off script. But it's a great conversation piece. And you mentioned that if they don't have it, because it's not uncommon that agencies don't have a contract. So when there's no contract in play, what's that look like?
That's a great question, though, because a lot of facilities are in the unknown with that part, because that comes from the initiation of your eligibility check. So when you check that insurance, one of the key questions that your verifier should ask is, are we in network or are we out of network? That will drive how the rest of the pieces fall into place, because a lot of places can't really see you out of network, because really, a payer does not cover a lot of times out-of-network benefits, meaning that you cannot obtain an out-of-network authorization on those. Or if they do, they come with a higher end cost, which means that financial screening call needs to happen. So in between your insurance verification piece, so that eligibility being ran, and before you could actually get that authorization, there needs to be a financial screening call to actually give that share of cost liability confirmation to that patient or the family to let them know what out-of-pocket expense they should be expecting.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So if it's out of network, that call happens, they need to make some decisions on whether they can even take that patient. If it's in network, kind of walk me through the next step there.
So in network, there still is a slim chance where they could have a deductible, they could have a coinsurance or a copay, so that therefore that financial call will still need to take place. Otherwise, if there's no shared cost to them, we still will go ahead and initiate that authorization. Once that authorization is in place, we do go ahead and update their EMR, the system, to actually make sure that they have all their visits lined up. But it's crucial to actually have something established in between time, right? Because authorization doesn't just happen overnight in most cases. There's a waiting period. That waiting period could be a couple of hours to a couple of weeks. It all depends on the payer. So where we do love those instantaneous authorization approvals, in the rare cases where we have to wait, it's crucial to know how many visits are we going to allow this provider, the clinician, to go out and treat this patient before we actually have that approval in place. Because if we see them too many times without that authorization being approved, we may have ended up seeing them more than what that authorization allowed, which means, again, who's going to eat that cost? So we have to be careful.
So can you walk us through the process of how a home health provider determines if a patient is considered homebound and meet the criteria to be eligible for home health services?
Yeah. So being homebound, that's a good question, because this is coming up a lot more lately. Being homebound is identified if you need any type of home aid assistance. That doesn't mean just an actual home aid that comes in to treat you or assist with you. That means actually a crutch, a wheelchair, some type of actual assistance that you need to be mobile outside of your home. That counts as homebound if you can't move about without having some sort of assistance.
So what are some of the common challenges that home health providers are facing in obtaining timely authorizations from payers for the services they want to provide to patients?
One of the main things really is your insurance verifications. So you not having your insurance in place and verified prior to seeing that patient is number one, but then also missing or incomplete clinical information that's supporting your request. So having your 485 or your plan of care is great, but if either is not having that actual order listed in there, the frequency in there, it could cause a delay, meaning that we'll have that clinical reviewer contact your department to actually get the additional information needed. And all of that causes delays.
So let's talk about some regulations and policies around home health eligibility and authorizations and how that impacts operations of home health agencies.
Eligibility, that one is not as really impacted, not in my personal opinion. It's not as heavily impacted by regulations as authorizations. Authorizations, you'll start seeing across the payers that there's more of a lengthy period of getting approvals, or there's less approved days or units that are authorized at a time, meaning there's one crucial payer that only allows a 30-day increment. So every 30 days, you have to get a reauthorization, or after a 60-day period, you have to go ahead and do a whole new review. So it all depends. You may need to do a whole new OASIS. You need to have that face-to-face all over again, or sometimes you only are allotted this amount before you can actually do anything. There are also some regulations that require before, in certain states, before you even initiate an approval, you have to see the patient a certain amount of time. So like you get 3 to 7 visits before you even need to initiate anything. But you need to know to follow up within that time frame, because you only have up to a week, if that, to get your approval. And if you bypass that, then that means all those visits that were seen are not going to be paid for.
So is there a risk? Is there a big risk if I'm an agency, I'm in network, that I could go ahead and probably see the patient if there's a delay in the auth for whatever, maybe a couple of times? Is there a number or best practice that says, hey, don't go more than this if you haven't gotten it back?
That is a fair question. I would say don't go more than 3 on any type of service. Why 3? I don't know. It's a magic number.
Yeah, but seems good.
I just say 3 because that seems like enough window for you actually to see. Normally the visits aren't back to back. They're kind of spaced out throughout a week or a couple week period. So that will allow you enough time to actually get that authorization in place and actually be able to cover yourself to have more visits.
Well, let me ask you this then. If you owned an agency and knowing everything you know about authorizations, Would you send anybody out before you got the authorization, or would you hold and wait until you got the authorization?
Well, I'm different. I'm like, I would do one or two. I would send them out because I know one or two at least guaranteed will be covered. Three is a little bit more risky, and I don't want to eat that much of a cost. But at least I know for me and my agency, I would like to have that that bucket to cover my patients so it won't fall back on. We're in hospice and home health. Why would I want a family to eat that cost? It's a sensitive time for them. So I at least want to have that cushion prepared for them.
You're balancing business and patients, right? You're trying to do the right thing by the patient and also make sure that you're doing the right thing by your employees and running your own business. So I agree with you. What advice then would you give home health providers to help them more effectively manage their eligibility and auth process? And I want to insert that sometimes we talk to people and somebody in their office who's doing it, and they don't necessarily think about what qualifications are needed. And I know, you know, we are going through a certification process. Can you talk about some of those qualifications and best practice there for effectively managing that?
Yes, I loved when I saw this question because you hit the nail on the head with this one. Intake team, it is crucial for your intake team to obtain all of the insurance policies or to know the insurance policies so that not only we can scan them in, the more you scan in people, the better, because it's not just enough. We're human. Human are flawed. So we could enter something incorrectly and a typo could mean a whole delay of a day or two. And so if we just scan it in, it's more of a visual. We can actually see it. Plus it has numbers on the back of the card. So not just the front of the card, let's scan the back of the card too, because those numbers are important. Social security numbers. Social security numbers play a major hand, because when we can't get that actual policy number, the best thing we could use in place, social security number, the patient's full name, and their date of birth. You can never go wrong with those. When requesting an authorization, have a start of care. It's good that we know that that we need an authorization. Yeah, if you have an outline, that's great. But if we don't know when we're going to initiate that for, we may get it too early, which means that your services aren't really going to fall in line with that actual care plan. So we want to know actually when that start of care is going to be. A lot of times we're seeing that people want to request things 10 days early, too early. Yeah, at least a 5-day gap should be best. So keep that in mind. What type of services are we requesting? Now, me off the bat, like our team here at HRP, we'll request everything because we'd rather have more than not enough. It's always best to have more than you need than not enough, right? So we'll do that. But also, we want to make sure that we have our diagnosis code. We can't request anything without a diagnosis code. Attending provider's full name and their MPI. And once we all have that, we're pretty much good to go. One other piece of advice that I had, whether you're outsourcing or you're able to keep the ENA in-house, to know your payers and their requirements. Knowing all of your payers and how they operate will help you determine timelines and to make everything timely. So what does that mean? That means if there's any type of, like how I was speaking before, you can see the patient 3 to 7 visits before you need to initiate an authorization. Many people don't know that about certain states. Or maybe it's that we need to have that start of care on file before you actually initiate anything. So that means go out and see the patient first that one visit. Once you enter your notes, then we can go ahead and initiate that. But you have 3 days in order to do that. If you don't know those little nuances, you're shooting yourself in the foot right there.
Yeah, you know, we tell agencies all the time they should evaluate their payers every year because they change, right? And once you get them figured out, they change. And that's a common area we see is that people don't do that or agencies don't do that. And so then they got some gaps in processes as well. No, that's good feedback. How do if an agency is having some troubles with authorization. Do you recommend that you basically go back to step one of the payers and say, hey, let's pull all the payer contracts out and then let's create a matrix 30-day authorizations, right? Or follow-up authorizations.
You're right on all accounts. And in a perfect world, I would love to just have that window to create that payer matrix, because that would be ideal in order for, not only will it help give a perspective on both ends for everybody to know how the payers are operating, but also it will expedite our process flow in working them, right? Because if we know, X, Y, and Z don't even need an authorization right off the bat. Okay, boom, boom, boom. Let's knock them out the way. Get them in, get them admitted. But then if we know that, oh, this one is going to give us a hang up, then we'll know to start on that at whatever time that that payer is given. So having that layout is lovely to have. Some of our clients actually come on board with that. But those who are not, we actually started building that out for them.
Yeah, I'm sure that's super helpful. So kind of looking ahead, what do you anticipate to be the biggest changes or challenges in the home health eligibility and authorization landscape over the next few years?
I'm going to start with challenges on that one. For all in this industry, it's a rapid growth in demand, right? So we know that the patients are in high demand and coming into this industry, but also the clinicians and agencies are needing more assistance in operating in this particular field because they're not really understanding the ENA realm entirely and they can't keep up with the volume and the demand of it, right? What I loved about this question is because HRP is falling right on time with meeting this demand as it rapidly grows, because internally, if I can spill the beans a little bit, we have a game changer coming. And our game changer for our ENA department is to build out Velocity, our internal platform, to actually maximize this area. So automating a lot of the processes and actually having a real-time view and actually getting these eligibilities and authorizations out the door.
That's good input on that. You know, we saw the gap, right? And that's the beauty of knowing that authorizations is a big problem across the whole medical space. I like to stay in the post-acute world because that's the world I know, but it is a big challenge to be able to see stuff in real time. The other thing about when you're managing authorizations, either through from a vendor perspective or from an agency perspective, is really understanding what is capacity. How many authorizations can somebody do in a day? You have any guess on what some of those numbers are?
It really depends on who and where you're working. By who is the payer? And the where is the state. So depending on the two and the portals, portal access is essential by all means. That's another tip for all the facilities. Get portal access. We no longer want to do things by fax and phones as much as possible, because having a portal means you get more efficient real-time access and availability with your authorizations and your eligibilities. So when it comes to eligibilities, you can knock out, let's say 100. You could really knock out a lot of them in a short period of time, in an hour even. If you're, especially if you're automating that process, you could do even more. But manually doing an authorization via portal or even having to call, that combination, I would say you should at least be able to hit at least 30 to 40, depending on the payer, in a day.
Yeah, it'd be good for them to do a time study. Because you're right, if there's no portal access, those are going to take longer than if there is. And I do know some payers, their authorization process or maybe even portal doesn't maybe have all the technology or the bells and whistles that other portals have. But to understand that number is critically important, because Jamila, help me understand, if you get behind, what's the pain in getting behind in an authorization or authorizations if it's not managed properly? What can that do to
you? What side are we looking at the pain coming from? Because the pain could be from the patients and the family not getting the help that they need. So it's delaying their services. The agency not only not being able to go out and treat, but also not being able to get paid, right? Or, you know, getting things recouped. Because if your eligibility and your authorizations are off, those payments that were coming in are halted or reclaimed. Or from our end, the volume that's backing up because of the backlog, it actually throws off what currently is coming out. So if you don't address both a backlog and the current at the same time, then it's just going to be a madhouse because you're never going to be catching up. You're always going to be in a deficit.
What about a suggestion if an agency, let's say because most agencies maybe have just one person doing the office, that person gets sick, goes on vacations, out, maybe, you know, maybe they quit or whatever. What advice would you give an agency to have a backup plan, or what would that backup plan look like? Because a lot of people don't think about the backup plans.
That is so true. So I'm big on documentation, having a process flow. Everyone should be cross-trained to know a process. And also, we need clear documentation, right? There should be notations in there that any person going behind you reading it should be able to clearly know where you last left off and what is currently needed, if anything. So your documentation, plus having a clear outline of what that process should be, and having somebody, a proper coverage lined up. All of that should be able to secure any agency when someone is down.
Yeah, the rule of thumb that we always talk about is if you have one position, you need two backups, because your one backup could already be busy, or maybe they're out at the same time and then you're still in the same boat. So we always say for every one, you probably need two backups. And yeah. Yes, you're correct. Having a clear and concise SOP, as well as even maybe even video in the process, could be somewhat beneficial to people. Mm-hmm.
These tips, I feel like if as an agency owner, these are the things I really want to hear about. What are some practical things I can do to not only be prepared and be proactive? That's plan A, right? But then, okay, well, let's say we're not in that position yet. How are we going to pick up the mess a little bit? And just from an HRP, you know, standpoint, we've seen over this last year the dire need for eligibility and authorization services, which is why we have built this department, and you've done such an awesome job of heading this up. So
having not just having a person be able to work your ENA, but having someone be able to own that process, meaning having the knowledge behind there. So here at HRP, we actually have a certification part where we just started actually allowing our team to get fully certified, to keep on top of all of the regulations so that they can stay up to date in the ENA world and actually be able to own the full process all the way around. So we don't just want to just say we do ENA, but we know the ins and outs. We really are experts in this realm. And that's what I love about HRP, because we are really advocating for our team to be just that.
What about the CEO? I heard he's a pretty cool guy.
He's okay on some days. We tolerate
when he's not golfing or getting Botox. Just saying.
Oh,
that was such a good burn.
Wow. Okay, I shouldn't ask that question. It's a good note to end on.
Not editing that out. No, it's very clear, Jamila, that you are passionate about this, and I love that, because you're right. Like, we develop these experts on our team so that, because we know people are depending on us. It's that coordination of, you know, the referral sources are depending on the providers are depending on you to pull these eligibilities, but ultimately the patient is depending on us to get the care that they need. Their families are depending on us to get the care provided. And so that really is our focus, and that is our heart.
Yeah, well, not only that, patient care is critically important, but also in the pursuit of creating predictable revenue, you've got to have this process mastered.
Yep.
Every step of it. Otherwise you're going to continue to get delayed or have bottlenecks in your receivables, which, you know, you just at this point in time in this industry with all the regulations, all the changes, you gotta have everything tightened up. So if you want more information about eligibility and authorizations, you know, feel free to reach out to us, or if you got any questions of saying, hey, you've got a process, but maybe you want to have somebody look at it, you know, Jamila would be someone that would be definitely trained and skilled to look at that process to help with any minor gaps. Well, awesome. We appreciate you so much. Appreciate you so much for taking time out and being with us. Until next time, we are out.